Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the June 2024 edition of Poet Radio. My name is Chris, host of the program on WGXC since 2015. This month, due to last-minute guest cancellation, I will instead be presenting recordings I've made in May and June. Late spring was a good season for poetry readings in the region, and I managed to capture some great events, as well as continue work on some long-term recording projects, which is where we'll begin. As many of you will be aware, since 2017, George Quasha and I have been collaborating to document his series of poems known as Preverbs. Last week, we met to record the volume The Laryngeal Uterus of the Word, which is part of the book Hearing Other. I'll be playing poems from the series at different points tonight, beginning with the title poem of that series.
The Laryngeal Uterus of the Word. Epigraph. Performance is as synthetic as breath. John Wieners. Who makes the music I can't stop hearing? The breath keeps trying to speak what we are. Hand to mouth and for mouthing, as both do the talking. Once you know it, it's never less intense on the earth. I write under cover of rightness. You'd never guess that I'm stowed away somewhere in here, me, I know not where. Pace makes space. Speaking makes the body, and consciously, counterintuitively, awkward pace. I am but moving toward the word, which is but moving toward me, I reflect. The lungs inflecting, climbing toward mind is something you feel in its time. Limbs speak first, then rhyme. Going talks. No way to stop looking like what you say. You and I explicitly don't remember learning this. Looking hard is to say hard. First, moving toward the word takes years, or so the theory knows. Speech, released into its articulate function, is sexual intellectual, as the saying flows. I am the student of my organs, but I can teach them a thing or two. Can speaking own the more I'm ready to approach hand to mouth?
That was George Quasha reading at a Preverbs recording session just last week. We'll return to at least one more Preverb later in the show. On Memorial Day, I passed through Great Barrington and caught a great reading at Familiar Trees by Vincent Katz and Cole Heinowitz, who will be featured next. Here's an interesting artifact, Cole Heinowitz reading from Ralph Waldo Emerson's Method of Nature at the very start of her reading.
But what strikes us in the fine genius is that which belongs of right to everyone. Let us speak plainly and with no false humility. The humility which is the ornament of man in the presence of the ideal good and fair is not to cloud his perception of that energy which he is. A man should know himself for a necessary actor. A link was wanting between two craving parts of nature, and he was hurled into being as the bridge over that yawning need. The mediator betwixt two else unmarriageable facts. His two parents held each one of the wants, and the union of foreign constituents in him enables him to do gladly and gracefully what the assembled human race could not have sufficed to do. He knows his own materials. Everywhere he applies himself to his work. He cannot read, he cannot think, he cannot look, but he unites the hitherto separated strands into a perfect cord. What are the thoughts we utter but the reason of our incarnation? To utter these thoughts, we took flesh, missionaries of everlasting word which will be spoken. Should not a man be sacred to himself and to men? Is it for him to account himself cheap and superfluous, or to linger by the wayside for opportunities? Did he not come into being because something must be done, which he and no other is and does? If only he sees, the world will be visible enough. He need not study where to stand, nor to put things in favorable lights. In him is the light. From him all things are to their center illuminated. What patron shall he ask for employment and reward? Here too was he born, to deliver the thought of his heart from the universe to the universe. To do an office which nature could not forego, nor he be discharged from rendering, and then emerge again into the holy silence and eternity out of which, as a man, he arose.
And you might ask, why is Heinowitz reading from Emerson? She was doing so in response to Vincent Katz's performance, which had transpired immediately before, explaining how she thought it addressed the dimension and integrity of his work. So I'd like to turn now to Katz's reading for a moment, which began with his incredible translation of Sextus Propertius.
Yeah, so I thought I'd start out with a poem by somebody who's not technically me, although in a way it is. It's a translation that Michael referred to of a poem by Sextus Propertius, who lived in the first century BC under Augustus. And he wrote love poetry of a particular kind that was sort of a reaction. It started with Catullus, but a reaction to epic, basically, and to kind of self-importance. And so part of his thing was he refused to write poetry in support of the empire, which he was explicitly asked to do by his patron, Maecenas. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so he did that. He said, I can't write poems about empire. Although if I did, I would do the following, that rhetorical device. But he also can't write epic poetry. And this is a poem in which he deals with that topic. And you may remember some phrases from your homage to Sextus Propertius by another translator from the past. Reclining in Helicon's gentle shade, where flows the stream of Bellerophon's steed, I had appeared ready to sing on my lyre of your kings, Alba, and their deeds, no small undertaking. I had put my little mouth to this gushing source where Father Ennius, when he was thirsty, once drank, and sang the Curian brothers and the weapons of the Horatii, kingdoms and trophies brought on the Aemilian ship, victorious delays by Fabius, the unlucky battle at Cannae, and gods turned to pious vows. The Lares banishing Hannibal from the Roman seat, and Jove saved by the honking of geese. When Phoebus, spying me from a Castalian tree, speaks up, leaning on his golden lyre in front of a cave. What does this river have to do with you, you flake? Who asked you to try heroic poetry? There's no success awaiting you here, Propertius. Small wheels are for tilling soft fields. May your book be often tossed on the night table. May a girl read it alone while expecting her man. Why does your page drift from its prescribed course? Your genius's skiff must not be overloaded. One oar strikes water, the other scratches sand. You'll be okay. The largest crowd is out at sea. He had spoken, and with ivory plectrum, points out a spot to which a new path has been made on the damp earth. Here was a mossy cave with mosaics affixed, and drums were hanging from the hollow rock, the muses' instruments, and a sculpted image of Father Silenus, and your pipe, Pan Tegeaeus, and the swift doves of Mistress Venus, my flock, wet their purple beaks at the Gorgon's pool. The various girls, each of the nine at her given art, work tender hands at their gifts. This one weaves ivy into thyrsi. This one harmonizes poetry to strings. And that one weaves a rose with each hand. And of their number, one of the goddesses touched me. From her appearance, I think it was Calliope. You will always be happy sailing with the white swans, and the war horse's neighing won't lead you to arms. Make sure not to blow the martial summons with raucous horn, and don't stain the Aeonian grove with Mars. Don't recount how battles under the Marian standard may stand, how Rome smashes the Teuton's wealth, or how the barbarian Rhine, flooded with the Suevi's blood, tosses wounded bodies in its dreary waters. Naturally, you will sing of lovers crowned at their enemy's threshold, and the drunken standards of nocturnal pursuit, that from you he may learn to enchant shut-in girls, whoever will want to harm stern men with art. Thus Calliope, and with the desired waters from her fountain, she moistened my mouth with Philetean water.
That was Vincent Katz reading from his translation from Latin of the great elegiac poet of the Augustan age, and Sextus Propertius in Great Barrington. And last month, I'm going to drop in another Quasha poem now.
Life After Breath. Epigraph. Speaking man dances on the pulsating blood. Alfred Bauer. Breathing knows what's coming. Syntax covers, pacing in step accord. I obstruct to articulate the flow. Time's got rhythm. Our world's on heart call. It gets more thinkable as more tellable. They're saying beyond the rabbit hole. A past life is what is feeling forward, now getting out and on. My antagonists moving within articulate my possible. The poem is an organ of meaning I play at, keyed. Time rhythms how the feeling goes. Frame frames frame, so why pose? Undercover write, writes out under time. The poem is a tongue articulating by obstruction. You have to get past it to know it. I grow so to know so. Destiny is the name of what comes toward us as we birth further out. There's music that wants you to listen belly first. And the truth will let you be.
George Quasha reading Life After Breath here on Poet Radio. On the 11th of June, Quasha's publishing group, Station Hill, sponsored a reading in Barrytown by Michael Bond, publisher of Shuffleoff Press. And here is an excerpt from that event.
Etiquette lesson number 3, politely escaping knowledge in the application of uncertainty. It's often necessary to escape knowledge when uncertain conditions threaten Western civ as we have come to know and cherish it, which is where knowledge, such as it is, sneaks in, bringing backdoor requirements, given who knows who will now come barreling through the front door without knocking, a new kind of Gnostic rap with warrant or without, the game changed, presto changeo, and there we are, asphalt shattered, glass glint, siren songs wail through crowd roar, crack of wood on bone, counterpoint to visions of archonic, corrupted purple majesty and other knowledge best ignored if you can't handle questions, lead into bewildered outskirts of pirate utopia suburb, past conflict, souped up with high-octane mental quirks to resemble some kind of ground that excludes noumena lodged in mountains, springs, trees, lakes, all in the name of knowledge apparatuses, foregone subject funnel leave Sirius B at no further's mercy. A visual impairment, certain leaves in the wake of adding up collateral collected on promise of the real deal, while Sirius B, not to mention C, opened portals beyond or within theories of contamination to include original eruptions of strange content continues to signal alternate routes through insatiable time's elusive coherence. Having lost the way as par for some course slips in and out of this vibratory frequency now here and now here, where here populates immaculate intersections with immediate black holes provide the key to understand the universe, if not for all that pesky math, which, unlike these words, lacks sufficient confusion coefficient to qualify a world of historic crack-ups, current universal truth meltdown, never more sexy than in the mouths of random wannabe tyrants flattened through P.T. Barnum's philosophical insights into birth statistics, confectionary temporal scattering follows close on self-evident truths no longer held with the same warmth given Thomas Jefferson's no doubt communist agenda, now seen in certain circles to offer far too much liberty and shit like that to people who haven't earned it, since instead of working at decent, God-fearing jobs like the rest of America, they were slaves. So they didn't even have to worry about getting laid off or fired or some commie trying to organize a union. You'd think they'd get over it. The road disappears and fog rises off the bay, cold airs kiss leaves connections beyond the pale appearance moonlight insists on, if only to soften otherwise dour speculation on new status and needs end of others' operational approval deemed necessary once, though ensuing freedom stall leaves vacancy-filled streets with despair, as if this mattered, as if a skittering gun across poems asphalt, a color-coded passage through the doom door extends beyond homes, old hunger for your soul, unredeemed morphogenetic memory, entangled spell in spite of sonal weave and crystal measure, that lattice or matrix recalls Schrodinger's contribution, slicing higher dimensional phase space at a point above reality's stony lock, reveals starlight coagulated in each leaf's life. The light woven into this flesh leaves what weaves and is woven jammed up against Planck's little number. As inexplicable as, say, life, whose elementary fact rivals any mystery you'd care to face, even Schrodinger's statistics bequeath uncertain as face to face with a bear, in which case Planck may have little to offer, no pun intended, when the choice resembles a list on a distant faded flyer called What to Do in Case of Encounter. Though you could measure the distance to the top of the tree in Planck length units, not that that would make much difference, what with the hot, rank breath on your ass. But statistically speaking, it's all up for grabs till Schrodinger's wave breaks, a concept difficult for mind to hold, and not just because it has no hands and it's a wave, but the beat also woven, the bear also woven starlight, focuses a certain singular attention, tends to dispel fog, and even roads if they're found to slow your ascent up the tree. Escaping knowledge is sometimes a matter, oh, this is about, so Niels Bohr, so they had a really hard time dealing with this fact that every time they tried to measure the velocity of an electron, they got one answer, and when they tried to measure the location of the same electron, they got a different answer. In one case, it looked like a wave, in the other case, it looked like a particle, and you can't have a wave and a particle, because it can't be the same thing, right? I mean, not if you've got language, that, like, that's all they know is to talk about. So, Heisenberg tried to, he attempted to save humanism by arguing that it was a question of the instrument, that the instrument interfered with the event, and therefore you got a different result based on the instrument. Bohr said, bullshit, it's the world, that's it. That's all you ever do, no matter what instrument you got, that's it, buddy. He called it complementarity. For everything that we see, its opposite also exists. There's no contradiction. Or the contradiction is reality. You can't escape it. So that's his idea of complementarity. Escaping knowledge is sometimes a matter of complementarity, a state of having your cake and eating it. Which sounds good if a little confused, but as long as you get the cake, who cares if it makes sense, right? The knowledge takes a gut punch, abandoned as if all those fiery auto-de-fés were for naught, which they were, though not quite the way Giordano Bruno anticipated it. Look where that got him. Hey, we all know where this stuff comes from, he told the inquisitors, so I'll say nothing about yours and you just let me be. Sure thing, Gordy, as if the purveyors of knowledge, the dominators, our father who art the boss, would dream of sharing their stranglehold on naming's lock with some weirdo, quasi-Dominican, pandeist magician with a delusion of an infinite universe of love. Cue Johnny Cash. And it burns, 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 a ring of fire. The Ring of Fire, which indicates the poem is restless, tired, and has had enough for one day. Mm-hmm. Knowing the road at this point is a far cry from some other point, if you know what I mean. Not that any one of them matters much when the rubber hits it, as they say, often in unofficial nocturnal border crossing. Cliff leap into black water, kiss snatched in corner shadows. Then the road takes the reins and escaping knowledge takes place, often with pain of fractured assumption, which could take things toward arguments over whether she died or didn't before being transported to heaven, body or no body. It's never taken much to set hounds of conflict howling at each other, and of course, inevitable cleanup operations, jackboots. But no, being taken up is not the stake here. Where knowledge equals a tabled elbow prohibition, as well as criminal determinations of other ways of doing it, burrowed deep into flesh's pre-knowing pit, that dark realm of gut punch leaves enlightenment operation to dangle rationally from a tree limb. All that knowledge jerking and pissing its pants as the crowd gathers round for a photo with the smiling hangman lives next door. Speak to me as opening no longer has a leg to stand on when it's all closed down. Whitehead's bifurcation oozing through soul world stumps it. Body pulls mind pulls body into allegorical contortions. Much admired in grand halls where living dogs were cut open to extract data had nothing to do with dog's pain or its enduring love. Licking the hand of its tormentor, science splayed on the table, but goes into encyclopedias of well-organized categories to further puff up reasonable delusions of knowledge smells like old fish. Thank you.
That was Michael Bowen reading a chapbook titled Politely Escaping Knowledge in the Application of Uncertain, the old church, which is now not a church, in Barrytown a couple of weeks back. I want to remind listeners they are in tune to Poet Radio on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, where we'll now go back to Cole Heinowitz, this time reading her own work in Great Barrington.
This is a very recent poem. I just wrote it. It's called Autobiographical Collective Hearth. There's a deep crystal longing around the word for it. The heteronormative dyad is no home for it any more than the homonormative community. Fantasy or counter-fantasy, you can be equally bound and gagged by anyone claiming to explain what trauma overturned your infant paradise. Heaviness and lightness, high and low, match the tone and level with words that correspond to another relationship. So the regal stars can be crimson and I'm not as dumb as I look and say, if it's not too inconvenient, please fuck off. Incongruous with and superior to pragmatic discourse. Ripped, still living from the jagged gulf between existence and our name for it. I remember Jack saying, in this common lexicon world, to be realistic is to turn probabilities into absolutes, and laughing about it while trying to stick his tongue down my throat. Now, how funny is that? And Lynn talking me down after saying, you must slow yourself to be a muse whose tones dive order. To liquidate the can, you must resort to unfathomably smooth labor. Parked in the drive-thru, blasting rancheras into a hulk of sweated burlap. Seven birds appear in the middle of my thinking like little daubs of black paint on the naked tree, visibly crushed against the surface of what I wanted to show you. I get so embarrassed watching forms I can't name circling objective structures, then breaking into something so real to touch that the electric heaters blow the fuse, the toilet overflows, the dangling stairs to the fuse box believe in love as a way of suspending weight too dangerous to use. It is 7 a.m. and flooded with duration. I have a vision in the bathroom. Fire cannot pass through a mirror, which means with or without anesthesia, no one remembers a seizure. What is life after life? Asks Maria. So enmeshed in motherhood, she forgot the bird the spirit rides. Suzanne felt all the anaphora hurling her against the wall, but when the verbs changed tense, she found it allowed her to move. Corey said, I'm in an endless loop like a fountain that spouts and reabsorbs itself through incarnation after incarnation until any solid ground feels like peace. While on her back in a Polish wagon, circa 1951, Papusha sings in Romani, everything shakes from the laughter of the stars. My jaw, I hurt my jaw walking that night truck, a child murmurs on the Metro North. The woman, possibly his mother, soothes. Je t'adore. We gotta get that baby carriage back in the center door, yells one of the conductors, and coming from the seat in front, I hear a man explain, with ADD now, everyone is so into racism and finance, so eventually they just came along and gave him meth. All form addresses itself to its fellow forms through a hidden wound, a foreign language flickering below the heart. The flame in my own heart burns pale, thin, blue, and green. It wants to be warmed by the fire outside, but I know it's just pretending to be sick. The bright light of its shadow wells forth from the pit and shoots out with such strength you could almost see life flourish in its glow, not this withered paddock in the foreground calling itself my desire. Write a poem, Emily says, the way you'd build a fire. Place materials, ignite them, watch them burn. I gossip to find where the good wood is, Kate confessed. Corey admits to grabbing all the fallen branches off the ground and building a blaze that warmed the whole camp while the others were too busy learning how to make things belong to them to notice. When Joshua came over, I burned chair legs and construction scrap, and we cuddled under a blanket on the cold wood floor. It's no secret that I built the fire badly, with abandon simply because I could, and have reveled in misusing my skill at making fires since immunity was granted me to do so. Conrad arrives in a flourish of expletives and sage healthcare, demanding endless American shame, but first to have done with all this reverence for world building, I caution them, and declare an end to collective worship of the singular thinker, Suzanne insists with a crack of her whip. We can all build our own world, and that's fine, Adhar says, but what if there's only one world and we all have to share it? Wait. I think they're coming closer. Patrolling these platforms for unlicensed transmissions of intimacy. What if they find me writing this poem to you? I cross my own heart. I will not cross it out. The police have arrived and seen everything. I am passing around a bucket for donations from the floating world. Do not forgo the opportunity to give. We have nothing left to hide and must tap into questions we don't yet know we have. Yes, it is right to call that courage.
That was Cole Heinowitz reading Collective Autobiographical Hearth on Memorial Day weekend 2024. On the first day of June, I attended a fantastic outdoor reading at Tea Space in Rhinebeck. The occasion celebrated Pierre Joris receiving the annual Tea Space Poetry Award. Joris, a poet who embraces traditions of nomadism, a great translator, and who was a May 2019 guest on the program, is originally from Luxembourg. He was an important teacher of mine at Albany and gave a potent reading among the birds and everything else present. For various reasons, I believe this to be one of the best recordings I've ever made, and I want to present it in its entirety. So, Pierre Joris.
Obviously, the last few months have been a bit rough for people of my generation. We have lost a fair amount of friends, from Lynn Hajinian via Jerry Rothenberg to Paul Auster. And so let me start with a little poem that deals with death. We always say he or she died. That can be 700 years ago in the past or today in what we call the present, though not in that tense. Yet sometimes we say she, he is dying, which always refers to something or act. For can death be a thing? Will happen in the future. We never say she, he dies today. A present tense would sound like a future. No, dying's always in the past, always has happened already. It's never more than someone else's memory of a past event. As if you will never die, but have always already done so in the past. And so the first couple of poems I read are from a little book called The Rothenberg Variations. The poems were composed following a détourné 7+ method. Each poem is based on word material, each seventh word, of the first 15 poems in Jerome Rothenberg's first and latest books at that time. The arrangement is my own, as are excisions, additions, subtractions, and divisions. I think there's a kind of architectural sense to that kind of poem. Variation number one. Where sun still black, fish smells us in the long city, at large in the wound of our curving vagina. The wind crickets knew you, the stolen cavity wraps heads, splitting poison gills, drew blood, a sad white heart, fully there, searching paradise. Two. And the cry, neighbors there, but he comes, my fish comes, emptied the death of light. They cross the lie, a fish comes, cracks the hole, hands disrupted by a spider, grew out of air, moon, blood. We roof, we cold, what scraping, where dead soldiers looked, words dark, my bed, my icicle. Three, old legs and fish, terror sees behind mountains, how to be mountains. He thinks it's all up, I acts like an overnight vase. Your two strides, something, lilies, cigars, asters, single out graves. No, granite movement flowers, but bronze flowers hidden in stones. And then an extract from a poem called Canto Diurno, which goes back to the early 80s. So I'm an anthologist, and today I'm doing a little anthology of my work. And with Nicole's aid, he was really the co-editor, as you all need co-editors on anthologies. From Canto Diurno, number one. It was an idea of writing, of having a whole day and writing from morning to night so that you get the canto of that day. Here's an extract from Canto Diurno number one. 2 p.m. To write through the numbness of body, stretching the dream drum's skin, skein, this length of thread, a yarn wound twisted around a loose skeleton, coils, earthy suggestion of this, a quote, twisted skein of lies. The story goes on, notwithstanding the numbness, the cackle of geese warns of danger, the sky pierced, arrow-shaped flight of similar things, birds or tales of an endless piercing porous night tide, through which sweat of my life dangles me from a rope trick. Oh, how I envy Mozart's ease. Let it come down. Fragrant fragment pushed through to hold, held, told in hell. 2:45 p.m. Second attempt at translating Totenberg. Celan's insisted record of his 1967 meeting with Martin Heidegger. A disaster as far as Celan is concerned, according to most sources. Clearly Celan had hoped for something, the opening botany, Arnica eyebright, is of healing plants, which Heidegger did not, could not, would not provide. In The Visitor's book, he wrote a line, von einer Hoffnung heute, auf eines denkenden, kommendes Wort im Herzen. Then a walk on uneven, unplaned ground where they walk singly, Orchis und Orchis. Then in the car, later driving back, more talk, rough talk, crudes, overheard by a third person, the driver. And then a harsher landscape, high moor, long log path or trails, humidity. So here is the poem in my translation. Totenauberg, Annika, eye bright, the draft from the well with the star dye on top. In the Hütte, written in the book, whose name did it record before mine? In this book, the line about a hope today for a thinker's word to come in the heart. Wood turf, not evened, orchis and orchis, singly. Crudeness later while driving, clearly. He who drives us, the man, he listens in. The half-trod log trails in the high moor, humidity, much. 6:35 p.m. The hearth again and against the encroachments, the pull of polis, its exigencies. The question of hearth as elective, polis as de facto. The community of lovers has as its ultimate goal the destruction of society. Maurice Blanchot. A war machine, two beings made or not made for each other, a possibility of disaster. Here is the room, the closed space. Here no night can come to an end. Here happens the lie of union. A union always takes place by not taking place. There is no free union, André Breton. These walls are against polis. Here we hatch treachery against those who glorify us by codifying us. Here we destroy ourselves laughing, inventing community, unaware aware, the danger geese of polis cackle on the landing. The next session is from a longer sequence again called The Words of Urugu. Now in the Dogon mythology, there are two creators. There is Urugu and his brother Nomo. Nomo is the good guy. And Urugu, who's called the Pale Fox, is the bad guy. He makes messes, you know. And I have always been interested in my country, in Luxembourg, my original country, the fox tales that go back to the Middle Ages, the Reynard tales. And I have actually a poem where Reynard hides on Columbus's boat and comes to America in order to hang out with his cousin Coyote. And so there's all this material. And here is a sequence that's going to be 48. Here is a few of the words of Urugu, the pale fox. One, the naval word, world word, belly wound, healed from your side, in here up to my knees in pus. False divination, faithfully followed, gets the best man into trouble. Broken promises, worthless words. The technique of pillage from behind cloth masks, a muffled hands up, a crooked or hooked walking stick, a stumbling block. These naval men, all eyes like the wound of the umbilical cord, surrounded by skin. The mouse has an oblong second liver for the stolen goods. Round peanuts the ants can't handle, false appearances. Two, the word of the twin foxes. Twice yearly, a litter of one, never twins. Two foxes walk across the divination table, contradiction. With the heel, make a hole, drop in the seed. Let the soul now contradict the heel. Heart and heel do the same. Equality is contradiction. Opposed couple, two fat ducks rattle. Ploof. Three, the bad word of the bloated fox. We cannot read the answers. There are too many traces. stutter the answer. Too many peppers in the sauce make you cough and splutter. During the night, the lizard confuses the germinating seeds and eats them. Go back and start over. Those fruits were so sticky, their kernels so bitter, the thorns so sharp. Wait till they fall. The word is in the spleen. We no longer know where we are. And if I manage to wet my finger enough to turn the page, the last of the fox poems, the fox's silent word. Every 60 years, the moon of Sirius completes a revolution and renews the world. The mean or average of a human life. A secret ceremony for five men. This fox stays away from the divination table. I beg your pardon, you Gu Seru. Now we move a bit further up towards Morocco. Extracts from a sequence called the Fez Journals. Babou Djelloud, which is a famous gate in Fez. Clouds today, at least a few, to make the blue sky interesting. What is green inside and blue outside? A gate named after a goat. Its skin, at least like every true barrier or border, it is more hole than wall, more to go through. The Moussem crowds moved me back and forth, then kept me moving in the inside of the gate. A gate is to walk through, no matter the direction. I was door, the crowd hinge. I swung under its creak. One could live there, I mean, in the gate, be in shade, but traversed by wind and people to live there and not be a keeper. That is a challenge, for under it the blue and the green become interchangeable for who lives there. Only for those who come to it from either side will the colors matter, or at least tell them from where they are. When you are the gate, there is no need to know this subterfuge we call the inside and the outside. I am there again. Favorite place is middle, isthmus, the between, the only place that is all we can be in at once. And we move on to another city, in Larache. One, when colonialism holds you, French there, Spanish here, an old architecture circles the plaza, crenellating the minds. The two young women we stay with speak perfect Spanish for having gone to Spanish school here in Larache since age 3. They cannot read a street sign in Arabic, their language. Two, this time it is here, the lead or the lead, and I can't remember which one I wanted, the lead of religion. It is all over. It is all over when in the beginning is perfection. It is all over when the only hankering is for pristine Medina. It is all over when the educated middle class, techno-savvy as any roomie, says there is no veil over the book, only over the woman. Three, a mint tea on the plaza, and now another on El Balcón Atlántico, facing that western ocean, a pressed orange on the horizon in my glass and a black coffee. Ah, happiness at 8 a.m. Four, in the Maghreb of the Maghreb, on the furthest western point, there where the desert army is stopped by the sea, where Sidi Akbar danced his horse prancing into the waves, where now the mosque of Hassan II sits on land stolen from the people, there spins the Med Dervish of the Maghreb, spins and spins, it is no longer a dance. There is no ecstasy to it, only pain and breathlessness. He spins and spins and doesn't know in which direction to stop. East towards Mecca, west towards America. He twists and twists, skewered by Amecarica, the nightmare from which there is no waking up. Five. Here lies C.J. Jean Genet. Brought back to Larache in a burlap sack, tagged immigrant worker. Now two white stones at head and foot, green plants in between, looks out over ocean, tired from a long death. The stone says, he was born, as we all are, on one day, but he died on both the 14th and 15th of April. Here is a poem, I think, that came during the COVID period. No title. Listening to and thinking on Bruno Latour, becoming termite, seeing Kafka's bug as one of us today, our masked COVID times demand we put an equal sign between climate crisis and state of war, an uncivil civil war. The body of my children is invaded by the pesticides of my farmer friends. There is no external enemy, no two camps. The enemy is us. Nor does the virus come from outside. We are in its environment. It's been here way longer than we. It is thanks to the virus and its similars, bacteria, etc., that we have a place to live, i.e. air, plants, etc. Let's not waste this crisis, but use it to carefully grope our way towards our true memberships, our reconfigured compasses, beyond indicating our local north, point us to those connections. And a few poems from the Book of Sparrows. I love them here. One, this morning sparrow hopping, not hoping as spellchecker suggests, on that small branch and from it to another such baton, a few feet beyond the open window, in perfect accord with Bach's Partita for violin solo number 1 in B minor, comes from my speakers? Or is this collage just an illustration of my blatant paucity in knowing musical tempi? And Nicole's suggestion that birds came first, music after, makes me wonder if in truth it isn't Bach who is in perfect accord with the sparrow's harp. Whatever's true, both end, they, the sparrow and Bach and Nicole, an awesome, unholy trinity. Meant to write trinity, pace autocorrector, made my morning. Two, wish that titmouse was a sparrow so it could enter this poem sequence. She's in it anyway, welcome. Three, and so now Nordic Burn, a very crude oil tanker, claiming to be out of Monrovia with all its 754 feet, is foolishly trying to do what even given 1,300 feet did just a few days ago to the Suez Canal. Doing that to our narrows? That's so foolish. Our sparrows watching fall off their branches laughing, and I would too, and do laugh, and would fall off if I had such a branch. Watching those many sparrows bouncing around the hedge and fence takes a lot of agility. And back to this final poem, a very recent one. For Nicole, for a video she shot during one of our walks along the Narrows in Bay Ridge. Peace, rag, flag. Peace flag, tattooed, no, tattered, I see through. You land, you from land into sea, and nowhere to land, and vice versa, and versa vice, between sun and shade, between light and water, between rock and land, between wood and rock, tattered flag, bloodstained peace, tattooed flag. Hold up the peace flag, tattooed, no, tattered by soldiers washed in water, left not to dry but to hang, rope and black plastic tatters, hang it all, hangs in no balance, between land and sea, between you and them, between me and me, along the Verrazano shore, here to reassure me, and you there, is blood slowly washing out. There are holes, holes, holes in the flag between sea and land. There are algae adhering to rocks, waving in the water. There is broken wood, waving in the water. There are ripped black plastic bags, waving in the wind, calming, washing the blooded flag. Thank you.
That was Pierre Joris reading at T-Space in Rhinebeck at the beginning of June 2024. And that wraps it up for this month. Thank you so much for listening to the program, and please stay tuned to WGXC, Radio for Open Ears.